The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, everyone. Our theme for Ongo, some of you may be formal participants or know about it, I've spoken about it, is going straight on an ever-twisting path. The Bodhisattva path and the paramitas. The Bodhisattva, just to review, is a being who remains practicing in the world to be of benefit, to save and liberate all beings from suffering, which does include oneself. And the paramitas, are what was Shakyamuni's Buddha's aspiration, was the paramitas, or the perfections. So this vow to liberate all beings was Buddha's aspiration, and the paramitas, the perfections, are how the aspirations are practiced, right? Brought to life. And so we're taking up readings from Shantideva, Shantideva's Way of the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, and a Dogen fascicle called Arousing the Aspiration for Enlightenment. And Dogen asks in the fascicle, what is the one thing that bodhisattvas guard? As a bodhisattva is wanting this for all beings to be liberated. And he says, it is the aspiration for enlightenment. So I asked myself, what is an aspiration? Do we know what we're aspiring to? What is it to have an aspiration? Arousing aspiration. We're sitting here all day. So what gives? What is aspiration? What is it that aspires, that gives to this wanting to alleviate suffering? It's kind of mysterious how that comes into us, I think. The meaning of the aspiration for enlightenment, this is from Dogen, is to endeavor without ceasing, embody speech and thought to help all sentient beings and oneself to arouse the aspiration for enlightenment. This leads them into the Buddha way. And that is what we arouse in ourselves and each other on some level. It's aroused by this virtue of giving life to the Buddha within ourselves, seeing that in another, giving away our practice. Some say giving away our life. And giving away without the expectation is aspiration. We do it because it's our nature. It's our nature to want to do this. So aspiration in the Buddha Dharma is expressed as a feeling, attitude, intention to wish for goodness. That's what we aspire to wish for goodness, to transform our perception of the world. Most likely it has always been with us right from the beginning, and we arouse it. We arouse this intention for goodness and see what's in the way of that. Conscious of it or not, we do have this, I think, aspiration that in our practice, and might be why we seek out something. It's what keeps us going. It's what keeps me going. It's what might bring us here. And so being on a path, you've all already seen something about yourself. The world that has given rise to this mind. We do want to be free of our neurotic habits and mental anguish. We do. That search, that feeling of like, is this all there is? Is this all there is? Sometime that has arisen. And this enlightenment is just coming out of the darkness of ignorance. That's the light. So arousing the aspiration for enlightenment is arousing the Bodhi heart. And we call it bodhicitta. Bodhicitta. The mind of awakening, the mind of love. We want to be part in some way of making things better. It's just natural. We need to get saner. We know this. We need to be insanity. We need to be insane. I had a mime teacher, and he said, he said, don't poo-poo insanity. You want to be insanity, right? It's good to be insane. It's like incomplete. I want to be incomplete and know this completion. We want to be part of making things better. Right where we are is the perfect place to start. Right where we are now, physically, with everything that we are, is the perfect place to start. So what is your deepest aspiration? What actually is your aspiration? What qualities do you feel need to be developed? Some of you spoke of them. Some of us know, like I had to develop generosity. There was a lot of fear around being generous as I grew up. And so that was a quality that was, I wanted to, but there was something in me that would like not allow me to be so generous. What qualities do you want to release? So this is what Buddha calls the customs of the noble ones. He says that we learn how to delight in abandoning whatever we have to abandon. It's a delight. I love that. It's a pleasure to let it go. We delight in abandoning what we don't, whatever we need to abandon, and to delight in developing whatever needs to be developed. We take delight in development, developing what is of value, abandoning what doesn't help us. So the paramitas are the antidotes to our lack of generosity, to our lack of patience, to our anger. That's how, you know, when that arises, then we can apply, we can develop in that paramita. When I'm impatient, I need that to develop patience. That's where that paramita can be developed, yeah? The bodhisattva cultivates generosity, morality, patience, joyful effort, meditation, and wisdom. And as we cultivate this, we're on the exact same page as Shantideva. Because just like us, if you read what he speaks about, he had to work really hard himself with his wild mind, overpowering emotions, entrenched habit patterns. Not just him, but all the way down a lineage. We all work with the same things. That's why we have all these teachings. And he was able to use his life just as it was to work intelligently with reactivity, with all that he wanted to abandon and see through and into. So we're in good company, a whole lineage. aspiration, bodhicitta. Although we don't always stop harming others or hurting others, or bringing pain, our intention is to sort out our confusion. That's aspirational bodhicitta. We're perfect and complete, and we need some work, right? But that's our aspiration. That's our aspirational bodhicitta. Unwaveringly, we want to do this. So we are bothered, which is good. When we're bothered by something that we've done, that's good. When we're bothered by conditions that we can have an effect on, that's good. I heard a talk recently. I like to listen to Thanissara Bhikkhu. He's a forest monk. And he mentioned two terms that I'd never heard of in my years of practice, because it's more from Theravada. But I thought they were interesting. And he said, these two things are what keeps our practice online and on course. And I was like, why haven't I heard this? Or maybe I heard it in another way. But I was like, if it's so, these keep our practice alive and on course, is what he said. We should hear about this. Anyway, one is Samvega. Anybody hear of that? Samvega. It's not in the Zen tradition, but it's a spiritual urgency arising from three things. One is a sense of distress and disillusionment about life as it's usually lived. Okay, we hear that, but we never knew there was a term for it. I didn't. A sense of our own complicity and complacency is the second urgency. And the third is a determination to find a more meaningful way. He says, contrary to society at large, Buddhism encourages the cultivation of samvega, this disillusionment about life as we're living it. Something is not quite right, this complicity and complacing it and wanting to find a meaningful way. He says, as long as we balance it with pasada, that's the other part, which is a serene confidence that arises when you find a reliable way to address samvega. If we balance it with that, he says, samvega needs to arise first, the disillusionment, but if we don't have any hope or a sense of determination or intuition that there might be a better way, he says, our samvega leads to depression or despair. But if we get to that point sometime, which most of us have, where we're like, what is going on here in this life? What is it? That's that samvega. And maybe you can think back, like, at what point did that happen for you on your path? Like, where you went, like, what is going on here? And seriously question the way you were living. At what point did you experience this existential angst, they call it? There's got to be a better way. Is there a better way? Or is there something essential I'm missing? What's happening? We might feel that now. It's still driving us. And then at the same time, how could there be so much beauty? How can we have so much beauty and this be such an unjust place at this very same time? How can we bring about more manifestation of good and lessen the forces of greed, anger, and ignorance, the three poisons? There are these moments that we feel so alive and like everything's right. We can feel that. And we're aligned with it. And sometimes we can feel how we just go on autopilot when we're driven by habit energy. And we don't really appreciate the short time we have in this life. It's just not there. So sometimes and often for people, these questions really become vivid when there's a great loss in our life, when something really hits us hard and we have a great loss or something traumatic. Sometimes this comes to us when we've heard something, like we heard the Dharma and it turned something in us. Sometimes it's something we read. Sometimes it's an encounter with a person who has bodhicitta, just a loving heart, awaking a loving heart, and it just suddenly, like, it comes up forward. As Dogen says, even a humble person who arouses this aspiration is already a guiding teacher of all sentient beings. So when we meet that in a person, they're already a guiding teacher. We can be that as well. They may not even be Buddhist, but they've developed their heart and mind of loving, and we're influenced by that heart and mind. And we see, oh, there is something going on here. There's another way. I see it. I remember asking people these questions, and sometimes I would get the response like, just resign yourself and hope for the best. And I'd be like, really? Like, that's it? Just resign yourself to the way things are and try to enjoy your life as best as you can despite them. Something like that. Just avail yourself of whatever pleasurable diversions you can. I was like, really? Is that what the answer is? I don't know. At a certain point, many of us refuse that. Refuse to accept that answer. That that's the best we can do is resign ourselves and hope for the best. And we don't have any idea of what we're supposed to do next. We may suspect we're deluding ourselves, indulging in wishful thinking, but we don't quite know where to go. It's, as I said, I feel like it's quite a mystery how this determination arises to find something, to address what is happening. It's like the first ox herding picture. It's that person, and there's a path, but they're standing in the weeds. It's that first one upstairs in the Buddha hall. And there's no path until we step. We take a step and there's a path. We took a step. So that first picture is that, like, where do I go? It's just a bunch of weeds. Like, I've done this. Everybody said this was going to bring this and this, and we still feel the same. When I was at the monastery, I was reading this book that I got. It's called You Are Still Here. You Are Still Here. Interesting title. Zen Teachings of Kyogen Carlson. So Kyogen was a teacher at Dharma Rain Center in Oregon from the Katagiri lineage. And he walking on the way to the Zendo one day, he had a heart attack and died like that. So you can imagine how all his students felt. And the Dharma world really celebrated his life. He was a great teacher. And I copied what he wrote in the first chapter on the way-seeking mind. He wrote, "This aspiration arises in prisons, in concentration camps, and amid the worst degradation. When people take a look at their lives and the world around them and say, 'There's got to be something more than this,' they are ready. They are ready to go down to that place beneath appearances and superficial aspects of life, and there they may find the seed of Bodhi. We cannot predict it. We cannot manipulate it. When conditions ripen, that seed will sprout." It is a natural arising, innate in us. We are born to become Buddhas. So, we practice. We practice. We have to, like a tomato, we just got to hang out on that vine and fully alive in this process as we're ripening with sun and wind and rain and earth and soil, rousing the Bodhi heart, connecting with the longing for enlightenment. So in Dogen's fascicle, Arousing the Aspiration for Enlightenment, he calls it Hotsu Bodhishin. Hotsu Bodhishin. It can be kind of tricky, and he speaks of this in several places in his teaching, because the emphasis on the teachings could be the non-seeking mind, non-seeking in training, now gaining ideas. So what can aspiration be if there's no gaining idea? If it's not such a self-centered motivation to improve, to get something. What is aspiration if we're non-seeking? If that's what's emphasized. And Joko Beck, in her book, warns us about aspiration sliding into expectation. She says, when we have aspiration, we look at things in a completely different way than when we have expectation. So you can think about you're coming here today, and some of us may have aspiration just to the aspire for just sitting and practicing, and then it could slide into something we want out of today or expect will happen because we're spending 8 o'clock till 6 o'clock sitting zazen. What is this? She asks. In aspiration, there is a strong dose of courage to stay in this moment, having a strong sense that this moment is it. There is no place else we are alive. When the mind wanders off into expectations, having aspiration means gently returning to the present moment. The mind will wander off all the time, and when it does, simply return to the moment without worrying or getting excited. Centeredness, she says. Samadhi will develop naturally, single-pointed concentration. And inevitably, from this kind of practice, an aspiration itself will grow deeper and clearer. Equanimity, often used to describe the way in which we can bounce back when our mind wanders in meditation. So expectation, what is that? Assumptions, presumptions, projections, we will or should achieve something. And yet, joyful effort. What is that? Is that different? Why do we make an effort? That's one of the paramitas, effort, diligence. The emotional upsets we experience as problems because we don't want things to be the way they are. We all have expectations. We need to recognize this. How do we know? How do you know if it's an expectation or an aspiration? For me, it's a disappointment that I feel really deeply in my heart. Something wasn't met. Comparisons or measurements could be expectations. Growling. Finding yourself growling about what's happening. Yeah. Just sometimes it's just that heartbreak of just, I feel so attached to something I wanted, I expected, personally invested in an outcome. Yeah. And as practice develops, gradually expectations start to shrivel up. You may have feel that. They're just like autumn leaves, right? They just suddenly just unhinge and blow away expectations. We start to be able to identify what is an expectation and return to the present aspiration. More and more, we're left with right here, now. We accept reality as it is. We accept people as they are, without trying to force ourselves into a box or someone else into a box. As they are, as it is, means the bare experience, direct bare experience, without all the ideals, without all the fantasies and frustrations that we layer on top. And this could be frightening because the expecting mind wants life to turn out a certain way. We want to feel good. Definitely, we don't want to be confused. We don't want to get upset. We each have a list of how we want it to be. And we're inspired to aspire. Joko says, when we're tired after a long day at work, we're simply a tired Buddha. When our legs hurt during zazen, simply aching, we're a hurting Buddha. When we're disappointed with some aspect of ourselves or something, we're a disappointed Buddha. That's simply it, she says. Don't you love her? The Chinese character Dogen uses for aspiration has two radicals. One is for earth, or ground over the heart and mind. So the feeling of a true aspiration might be a sense of a grounded heart. That's how we know. A grounded heart, a heart that's just completely resting on the earth. Like when the Buddha, on the night of his awakening, reached down and touched the earth. This is my witness. By whose seat, by whose power, by whose authority do you take that meditation seat? Mara challenged Buddha. The Buddha touched the earth. This is my witness. The ground above the heart. Aspiration. A heart grounded in the way things are, aligned with intention, our resolve. In one of his formal talks, Dogen said, practitioners today have to arouse deep aspiration for the way at least once. I was like intrigued by that. Why did he say that? At least once. For just one moment, letting go of everything completely, just once. Surrendering totally. We just have to do that just once. Have that aspiration. Giving our life away and trusting whatever is happening. Just once, he says. Practitioners today have to arouse deep aspiration for the way at least once. He says, arousing such an aspiration means thinking little of your own life, having deep compassion for all living beings, and entrusting your bodily life to the Buddha's teachings. If you have already aroused such aspiration, protect it. Do not lose it, even for a moment. It is impossible to realize Buddha Dharma without arousing such aspiration. One time a student of Dogen asked him, although many years have passed since first beginning practice, I have not yet had any realization. Since various teachers of old have said that the way does not depend upon intelligence or knowledge, is there something else in our tradition which I should keep in mind? And Dogen replies, I see Dogen sitting there, you're right about not relying on intelligence, talent, or quick-wittedness in learning the way. I think this is good news. This immediately opens up the way of practice to everyone. It doesn't depend on our mental capacities or anything like that. Well, what does authentic practice depend on? Asked the student. Dogen said, I believe this. It depends only on whether one's aspiration is firmly determined or not. For example, a person who desires to steal a precious treasure, to win a battle, or to win over a person will constantly seek an opportunity in whatever situation or occasion, since one's mind is always occupied with this desire. If one's desire is enthusiastic, one will not fail to fulfill it. In the same way, if the aspiration to realize the way is earnest enough, when you practice just sitting, though your aim may be high, you will hit the mark. Daito Roshi would often say, those who set out to accomplish it will definitely accomplish it. Those who don't set out to accomplish it will definitely won't accomplish it. So, have to engage our aspiration. Dogen gives a method for how to arouse such an aspiration. He says, just open to impermanence. Right in front of our eyes, all the time. Our own lives quickly passing by. Just open to that, and you'll find your aspiration. How you want to live. What will you do with this wild and precious life, as Mary Oliver Wood said. When we remember, he says, we don't know what will be, we will naturally ask ourselves how we want to live. So, arouse the aspiration for enlightenment. This is what we're studying. Arouse the mind of bodhicitta, the heart mind, to free oneself and liberate others. The loving heart. I'll end with a poem by Hafiz, the Sufi poet, who has a book of love poems. I keep them by my bed. It's nice to read a love poem before you go to sleep. This is called The Sun Never Says. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Look at what happens with a love like that. It lights the whole sky. Rousing the Bodhi heart with clear desire to alleviate the escalating suffering without knowing. Aspiration for getting out of the darkness or through, in and through it and understanding it. That it's not an enemy.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.